This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 594 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israeli attacks across Gaza have killed more than 700 Palestinians over the last 7 days, according to the latest figures from the Palestinian Health Ministry, as starvation continues to spread after more than 80 days of Israel's blockade. At least 160 were killed in a 24-hour period on Sunday, May 18th alone, including at least 40 in a massacre targeting displacement tents in Khan Yunus. In Jabalia, Beit Lahia, and Gaza City in northern Gaza, Israeli airstrikes killed more than 200 Palestinians in the 48-hour period between Friday, May 16th, and Saturday, May 17th, according to the Gaza government media office. Quote, "This is a series of ongoing massacres accompanied by the complete or partial destruction of more than 1,000 housing units, the re-destruction of what was already destroyed, and the forced displacement of more than 300,000 citizens to the already stricken Gaza City, which lacks any infrastructure to accommodate this massive number of forcibly displaced persons," the media office stated. Among the martyrs, 140 remain under the rubble as a result of the Israeli occupation army's deliberate denial of access to the bombed areas in northern Gaza, the office added. The Israeli attacks in northern Gaza, what it is calling Operation Gideon's Chariots, is, quote, "transforming the area into an open and systematic killing zone." Israeli drones have also focused on burning hundreds of tents designated for sheltering displaced persons in the Tal al-Zatar area of Jabalia Camp, Beit Lahia, and other areas in the north, amidst suspicious international silence and the active complicity in the ongoing genocide. The siege on North Gaza has accelerated in recent days. Mahmoud Sherbawi, a young man in Jabalia, filmed himself hiding from Israeli quadcopter shooting on Tuesday, May 20th.
"I am now in Jabalia camp and I am trapped by Israeli quadcopters. It's shooting us."
The United Nations Humanitarian Office stated that on May 19th, an Israeli airstrike hit a school in Nuseirat in central Gaza, killing 7 people, including 2 teachers who worked for the United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees. On Tuesday, the Israeli military issued further displacement orders affecting 26 neighborhoods in northern Gaza, specifically in Beit Lahia, Jabalia, and its refugee camp, the UN said. The affected area spans about 35 square kilometers and represents 10% of the Gaza Strip. Humanitarian partners estimate that as of midday Tuesday, more than 41,000 people were displaced. About 81% of all of Gaza's territory now falls within Israeli militarized zones or has been placed under displacement orders, the UN said on Wednesday. In Khan Yunus, in southern Gaza, the Israeli military issued displacement orders for 90% of the city area. Hind Hurari of Al Jazeera reported on May 19th that, quote, "We saw people evacuating under fire, holding whatever they could carry. And the Israeli forces told those Palestinians to evacuate to Al-Muwasi in Khan Yunus," which, she adds, has been targeted continuously by Israeli forces. She says, quote, "There has been ongoing attacks by artillery shelling, quadcopters, drones, and airstrikes across the Gaza Strip in areas like northern Gaza, Gaza City, Nuseirat, Deir Balah, and Khan Yunus. The situation continues to escalate, and Palestinians are left with no choices, no options, no places to go. Everywhere they go, they're still going to be targeted," she reported. That same day, May 19th, Israeli commandos disguised as Palestinian civilians shot and killed a man and detained his wife and child during a raid on a house in Khan Yunus. Al Jazeera reported that Israeli forces drove a civilian vehicle and raided the home as airstrikes pounded the surrounding area, residents said. Mahmoud Safi, a relative of the family, said that Israeli troops carried what appeared to be luggage and blankets on the top of their vehicle. The assassinated man was identified as Ahmed Sarhan, a leader of the armed wing of the Popular Resistance Committees. At least five other people were killed in the raid, in addition to Sarhan, according to medical sources. Donya Abu Sitta, who is a contributor to the Electronic Intifada, wrote in Drop Site News that, quote, according to witnesses, they killed Sarhan in front of his family and kidnapped his wife and children and shot dead another child in the street on their way out. Donya witnessed the airstrikes covering for the raid on Sarhan and his family. She reports, quote, I saw F-16 fighter jets and Apache helicopters flying very close by. So close, I felt like I could reach out and touch them. It was the first time I ever witnessed a missile fired from a warplane. I saw the massive orange fireball unleashed as the bomb exploded not far away. The buzzing of the drones overhead was deafening, but the sound of people's screams and wails were even louder. Everyone in the street was scattering hysterically, running for their lives. We live on a block with apartment complexes around a central courtyard, and I saw my neighbors standing by the windows trying to comprehend what was happening. Thick black smoke filled the air. Even though we had endured nearly 600 days of this war of extermination, I didn't believe we would survive this day. It was a living nightmare. Donya added that the Israeli military had carpet bombed the area, launching over 40 airstrikes in 40 minutes on some accounts. Hospitals continue to be besieged and forced out of service by Israeli attacks. Late Wednesday night, the Israeli military carried out artillery fire targeting northern Gaza's Al-Auda hospital, while drones also bombed water tanks at the health facility, according to Al Jazeera. Israel attacked the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis yet again this week, targeting their small warehouse of essential supplies. According to the World Health Organization, around 30% of the warehouse was destroyed. The warehouse was built by the WHO and included critical supplies such as prosthetic limbs, IV fluids, and dialysis solutions. Dr. Munir Al-Bursh, Director General of the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza, said that the damage caused by the Israeli airstrike on the warehouse at Nasser Medical Complex, quote, comes at a time when the stock levels of more than 45% of essential medicines had already reached zero, and basic medical supplies or those needed for surgical operations had exceeded 60% in shortages, even before this attack. Nasser Medical Complex was attacked last week, as we reported, as Israeli forces assassinated a journalist in a bombing that destroyed the hospital's burn unit. In addition, the Israeli military bombed the European Gaza hospital, also in Khan Yunis, last week. Since then, the hospital has been rendered out of service. I spoke with Dr. Majid Jaber, an emergency room physician at the European Gaza hospital who survived the bombing and said that it was the last medical facility that was able to provide basic care to cancer patients, and now the entire hospital is out of service following a series of Israeli attacks. On May 19th, at the Indonesian hospital in Beit Lahia, in northern Gaza, Israeli forces surrounded and besieged the facility as Israeli airstrikes targeted the power generators and fuel tanks to operate the generators, sparking a massive fire. Hospital workers told the United Nations that there were 55 people in the hospital, including patients and medical staff, with critical shortages of food and water. Staff and patients were forced to flee on foot, trying to maneuver gurneys over massive piles of rubble on the destroyed streets. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza said that Israel's targeting of electricity generators was a deliberate effort to destroy the capacity of the hospitals. Quote, the health situation in the northern Gaza Strip is catastrophic after the Indonesian hospital was put out of service, the ministry said, adding that every single hospital in Gaza is suffering from a lack of fuel and spare parts needed for generators. Tom Potokar, a British surgeon working at the Indonesian hospital, recorded this video after the attacks.
Well, it's another day of devastation here in Gaza. The stories coming from the north, absolutely horrific, particularly around the Indonesian hospital, but also in the Al-Muassi area this morning, where 36 people were killed in so-called safe zone. We've been operating all morning so far, and all for explosive injuries. One young woman with leg fracture and a shoulder fracture and a large wound on her buttock, who came in yesterday and is not yet aware that everyone in her family was killed in the onslaught. I mean, it's difficult to describe in words what's happening here. Constant sound of bombardment, jets overhead. If Cambodia was the killing fields, then Gaza now is the slaughterhouse.
That was Dr. Tom Potokar. Dr. Ezzedine Shehab, who also worked at the hospital, wrote on May 18th on Twitter or X, quote, "I no longer go to the Indonesian hospital. What foolishness it is to speak of hospitals in a place where life is no longer preserved, but merely postponed. Once I believed, oh, how bitterly I believed, that the presence of a doctor among the dying was a sacred thing, a last stand against the void. But here, where the void has taken residence in the very walls, what can sanctity do?" The hospital is surrounded now, not by men, not by soldiers even, but by machines. Drones humming above like metallic locusts, devoid of soul or pity. They know neither suffering nor mercy. They are the purest expression of obedience without conscience. They circle the building like vultures circling a carcass not yet dead enough. We still work at the clinic, though I no longer know if it's from duty or habit, or some grotesque need to perform life while surrounded by death. We whisper, we disinfect, we bind wounds that will open again. The scalpel, once a tool of healing, now feels like an accomplice. At home, the walls speak in cracks, the roof sags under the pressure of memory. The air smells like dust and grief. My mother tapes the broken windows each day with the care of a priest dressing a corpse. My father rations rice with the reverence of a man offering communion. But outside, outside, it never stops. The bombing continues with the faithfulness of a priest at prayer. It does not pause. It does not tire. It beats like a heart possessed by something inhuman. And now the streets, no, not streets, corridors of exile, rows of tents like gravestones made of fabric. Children play in the ashes, unaware that they are survivors of a war not yet finished. The army says, evacuate. To where? They do not say. Only, leave, disappear, unbecome. Famine grows near, but even hunger with its gnawing cruelty is familiar. Hunger is intimate. It is ours. What is worse, what is unbearable, is the silence that follows the blast. The silence in which you call a name and no one answers. The silence where meaning once lived. This is not a war. It is annihilation dressed in the costume of procedure. It is a logic without soul, a godless arithmetic of bodies and coordinates. And still, still, some whisper that God watches. I do not know. Sometimes I think he has turned his face away, not out of indifference, but out of shame. But if you are reading this, if your eyes have reached these words like a boat reaching a shore you thought unreachable, then for the love of all things holy and damned, do not look away. To look away is to become part of it. To forget is to bury us before we are dead. To remain silent is to drive the final nail. Those are excerpts of a tweet by Dr. Ezzedine Shehab written on May 18th. Israel announced earlier this week that it was allowing several trucks of humanitarian aid into Gaza after 80 days of complete closure and an engineered humanitarian disaster. However, the Gaza government media office and the United Nations and its partners said Wednesday morning that no trucks had entered since only a handful came in over the weekend. Late Wednesday evening, the media office said that finally trucks had entered carrying various types of aid, but the total number was fewer than 90. Quote, these aid trucks were allocated to a number of international and civil society organizations as part of efforts to distribute them to the Palestinian people to meet some of their urgent humanitarian needs, the media office stated. The 87 trucks that entered Wednesday evening are just a drop in the bucket compared with the staggering need in Gaza. Some 44,000 aid trucks should have entered since March 2nd, when Israel closed the crossings in flagrant violation of all international humanitarian laws. Gaza requires around 500 aid trucks and 50 fuel trucks daily to meet the bare minimum humanitarian needs of its population, the media office stated. The United Nations Humanitarian Office noted that the Israeli authorities are requiring the UN to offload supplies on the Palestinian side of Kerem Abu Salem or Kerem Shalom crossing and reload them separately once they secure UN teams access from inside. Only then is the UN able to bring any supplies closer to where people in need are sheltering. On May 20th, the Gaza Media Office stated that 326 deaths had been recorded due to malnutrition, food and medicine shortages, and more than 300 miscarriages among pregnant women were reported over the last 80 days. The humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip has reached catastrophic levels in every sense of the word, the office stated. Euromed Human Rights Monitor said on May 21st that it had documented the deaths of 26 Palestinians, including 9 children, in just a 24-hour period. Quote, these deaths are the result of a deliberate Israeli policy that weaponizes hunger and denial of treatment to kill Palestinian civilians. The Titan blockade, in place since March 2nd, disproportionately targets the most vulnerable and turns the man-made humanitarian catastrophe into a central tool of extermination. Meanwhile, Israeli lawmakers have been boasting that they are enjoying the destruction of Gaza and are calling for its entire ethnic cleansing, while the so-called international community not just watches, but continues to arm and abet these genocidal war crimes and crimes against humanity. Bezalel Smotrich, the Israeli finance minister, said that Israeli forces intend to, quote, level all of Gaza just as they leveled Rafah. In remarks to Israeli army radio this week, Smotrich said that, quote, the army's operation aims to occupy and cleanse areas in Gaza, and every house we destroy is considered a tunnel in our view. On May 19th, Smotrich gave a speech boasting of Israel's strategy of mass destruction in Gaza, saying the token amount of humanitarian aid is only being allowed in, quote, so the world does not stop us and accuse us of war crimes. The goal, he insisted, is to conquer, clear, and stay until Gaza is dismantled beyond recognition. Jeremy Scahill of Dropsite News analyzed the Israeli government's positions on the humanitarian aid ruse in recent days. Scahill writes, quote, Benjamin Netanyahu has made it clear. His decision to allow a minuscule amount of aid to enter Gaza is a tactical one aimed at quieting international condemnation of Israel's forced starvation of Gaza and to clear the path of a final solution imposed on the Palestinians of Gaza. We're going to take control of all of the Gaza Strip, Netanyahu vowed Monday in a video released by his office announcing that Israel would begin delivering minimal humanitarian aid, food and medicine only. Netanyahu claimed that international pressure, including from pro-Israel Republican U.S. senators and the White House, required the appearance of humanitarian intervention. Quote, our best friends in the world, senators I know as strong supporters of Israel, have warned that they cannot support us if images of mass starvation emerge, he said. They come to me and say, we'll give you all the help you need to win the war, but we can't be receiving pictures of famine, Netanyahu added. To continue the war of annihilation, he asserted, we need to do it in a way that they won't stop us. In a television interview on May 20th, Moshe Feiglin, a high-ranking politician and a former member of the Israeli parliament, also openly expressed genocidal intent. He told Israeli media that, quote, every child, every baby in Gaza is an enemy. The enemy is not Hamas. We need to conquer Gaza and colonize it and not leave a single Gazan child there. There is no other victory, he said. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of Gaza's Meshahar Generation by Nawar Nabil Diab, writing from Gaza. Nawar writes, quote, in this war, when I am bored, I go to sleep. But then I wake up around dawn to a bombardment and I am no longer bored. The explosions are so close that I go deaf for a few minutes, only able to hear a buzz in my ear that spreads all the way to my brain. In these moments after a bombardment, I pass through three stages. The first is the silent and frightened stare. I am stunned. I stand up only to sit down again because my legs can no longer carry the weight of my body. I try to process what is happening, but the conscious mind is protective and doesn't want me to pry further. The next stage brings out another coping mechanism, making light of the situation with humor. What a surprise that bombardment was. If my little sister is in the room, we'll say that the explosion was a balloon popping or a car tire. Other times we pretend that the bombardment is no big deal at all. The last is forgetting. I pretend it didn't happen and I go on unfazed. Most days I live in a state of meshahar. Meshahar is a word in Palestinian dialect specific to Gaza that means miserable or terribly unlucky. It's the feeling that bad luck is chasing you all the time. My mom keeps saying that we're a Meshahar generation. We were born when life was collapsing. It describes Palestinians perfectly because war and agony never fail to leave us alone. Israel broke the ceasefire in mid-March, and the war was back, though it was never really over. Over 100 people were killed by Israeli attacks during the ceasefire, and the drones never went away. But with the breaking of the ceasefire came the torturous sirens, the ground shaking, a return to Meshahar. The list of martyrs grew to more than 1,900 in just over a month. It was happening all over again. Israel issued evacuation orders for the Al-Mukhabarat area in Gaza City, where I live with my mother and younger brother. We left for Al-Nasser, another area of Gaza City where my uncle lives. I noticed barely any difference between the two areas. There was Meshahar all around. In our area, you saw stacked bags and blankets, people carrying their lives in sacks and looking hopeless. In Al-Nasser, people were not evacuating, but they also looked hopeless, shopping the empty markets. Sometimes I think that the only beauty that is left in Gaza City is the kind that you create in your own head through your own observations. It is a way to make yourself feel slightly better. I take photos with my phone, a Samsung, and it has helped me see the beauty in Gaza, which, if you train yourself to see it and to look closely, has no limit. Yet now the beauty I find is a different kind, an aching kind. It hides in people's misery, which breaks my heart. It is the sensation of al-faja, tragedy, the unbearable combination of grief and agony. Those are excerpts from Gaza's Meshahar Generation by Nawar Nabil Diab, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine. Zakaria Sarsak, a 13-year-old boy who had worked as a regular volunteer at the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah, helping paramedics transfer patients and fill IVs, was treated to a sort of a spa day and a new outfit by friends in Gaza this week. Saeed Mohammed, a filmmaker, took this video of Zakaria a few days ago. He jokes that Zakaria is getting married and they wanted to get him all dressed up. Gaza blogger Sina Al-Jamal, who posted the video, says, quote, in the midst of war, they tried to create a different kind of day for Zakaria. Laughter, a new outfit, and simple, spontaneous moments that felt like joy.
Come on, come on.
And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.